Okay, this is a great day and a horrible day for me. I will explain in a moment. I'm very happy to see students. I'm looking for students. I don't mind all the rabbis sitting in. They're older people, so I'm not going to change their lives. But
I'm not a rabbi, I'm an older person.
You are an honorary rabbi, what you went through in your life. This is a gentleman that doesn't know how he's alive. And he pinches himself when he sees his grandchildren in the elite units with my grandchildren of the IDF.
Wait a second, they have honorary doctors. They have honorary rabbis.
Believe me, they have honorary... Rabbi Dratch, I can't say publicly why you once gave an honorary smicha. If you don't know the story, talk at me privately. It'll blow your mind. Sometimes it's no good to know too much if you understand what I'm saying.
Who was the recipient?
Not while the mic and the recordings are on. Gentlemen, first of all, today Sunday, September 3rd, 2017. And Hanani Modela Kadosh Baruch Hu, I feel like a kid in front of the audience. I have so much to give. And I got so many compliments on last week's shiur, and it was a nothing with nothing, and they say to me, you're mechadesh on the slightest topics, but you don't know the hashkacha. We'll talk in a second. First of all, I want to mention I get a big mazel. I gained another great-grandson on Shabbos. And this great-grandson is big yichus, because his great-grandfather, Mitzad's mother, is the Svadik chief rabbi of Or Akiva. This great-grandson is indicative of all that Israel represents, the blood in his body, is he can't stop counting Moroccan, Czechoslovakian, Lithuanian, Polish, German, American, Canadian. It's a mamish a kibbutz galyot and one little baby. It's a very sad day for me because that's the second part of the story with all that we've accomplished here, and we've accomplished great things. But the price we pay, and today is the yahrzeit of my dear, dear David Applebaum, Rabbi Dr. David Applebaum, and his daughter Nava. And what can I tell you? She went to mikveh already, getting ready for the wedding the next day. They went to have a cup of coffee in Emek Rephaim, and of course the rest is history. It's many years already, but David has proven that the Gemara is not always right. The Gemara says, "Atid hamedlish takach min halev," and in David's case, the crowds get bigger every year that come to the yahrzeit at Har HaMenuchot. But we have to accept the good and the not so good. The Ribbono Shel Olam has his plan how to run the world. To just be worthy, lahadil Torah lahadira, and the Kabbonot should end, and only the nachat, the good. I also have to mention amazing Hashkacha Pratit, last week's shiur. So what did we speak about? We spoke about a wedding on by day, generally on Friday. When do you say vidui? Why do you have to say vidui? What does vidui mean? Mincha, all that goes with it. And I told you I had it halacha lemaaser in the Kollel a number of years ago. A student got married, not a youngster anymore, middle age. Got married, so I gave this year Sunday. He called me Friday afternoon, this Erev Shabbos, to tell me his wife is expecting their second child. So I have to tell you, I'm a very, very happy man. Something I said in this year caused a interesting reaction, and here I take you into a world that some of you will appreciate and some of you will just understand literally, but not the depth of it. I at the end of the tshuva, if you recall, Reb Menashe HaKatan got involved with Reb Chaim Sansevier's son, the Shinever Rav, and he said, once the Shinever Rav paskin what he paskin, this is the psak. And I explained to you a little bit about the Halberstam family. So I mentioned that they are Hungarians. So great-granddaughter wrote to me, Divrei Chaim's great-granddaughter, her name Miriam Kupski. So how can you refer to the Halberstams as Hungarians? They are definitely not Hungarian. And what she's telling me, that they're Galicianers. So I have to, first of all, I apologize, she's absolutely right. But I have to tell you, I grew up in Yeshiva University, Yeshiva Shkolchanan, and even in Lakewood, they were considered Hungarians. And I have to explain to you, see, Hungary falls between Austro-Germany and on one side, and Poland on the other side. And Galicia was, see, Hungary divided in half. One half was the Chatam Sofer, and the other half were Taka the Galicianas. And you are you Galicianas sitting here? I have here the Galicianas sitting right in front of me. All right, I said, let's speak. You're Hungarian. You didn't argue with me, because in why? So what happened was Galicia at times was part of Poland, at times was part of Hungary, but they had their own traditions. In other words, the Hungarians that were on the side near Austro-Germany never became Hasidim, basically. If you follow Rav Moshe Seifer and his family, they were all great rabbis, but there was not a concept of Hasidus there. In Galicia, they began as great rabbanim, but the influence of Poland affected them, and they became Hasidic as well. Now, as I gave you an example, if you said to the Satmar Rebbe, if you are Teitelbaum, Satmar Rebbe, he'd smack your face. He was Satmar Ruv. The fact that he became a Rebbe was only afterwards. All right, I don't want to say about his followers today, his Rebbeim today, Reb Aaron and what's the other one's name? Reb Zalman. I don't want to call them Rav. I'll call them Rebbeim already. But the Galicianas were really caught. And in Galicia, they spoke Yiddish. You see, in the other part of Hungary, they spoke Hungarian. If you go to Bnei Brak, you can still hear Hungarian on the streets. When I came in Aliyah, there were parts of Yerushalayim where you heard Hungarian on the street. They still continued. It was amazing. The Galicianas, Zem Geret Yiddish, their type of Yiddish, my grandfather used to come home from Shuva, Nefer Galiciana, Dabin for the Yomid, he would have heart failure. I remember my grandfather yelling at me, Kiddushoni, he used to go crazy, Kiddushoni. But you know, I live in Israel, and I have to tell you, we welcome all Jews and all this heart, and I daven in the Shtiblach in Katamon, and you all know Michael will testify in the Shtiblach in Katamon. You never know what the Nusach will be. It's the Chazan that sets the Nusach. And same thing in the army, it's the only solution. Rav Gorin tried to introduce Nusach Achid. The only thing that happened that was uniform, Achid, was that in every army base it depended on the Chazan. I remember in basic training, the second week in already, I saw what's happening. So in advance, we divided up the davening. We announced in advance the Kabbalah Shabbos would be one Nusach, the Mar would be another Nusach, the Shacharis a third Nusach, the Musaf a fourth Nusach. But this is Israel today. Will there ever be one Nusach, as Rav Gorin dreamt about? Maybe in 100 years. Kibbutz Goliath is a slow process. So, and something else happened that affects you as well. So at the end of her letter to me, anyway, I thank her for her kind comments, and I accept the rebuke, and I have to correct myself, but not correct myself. For us Litvakin, the Galicianas were still Hungarians. But she's right that the Galiciana, if you look on a map today, you will not find it. You have to look on a map of pre-World War I, I believe it is. There I finally found Galicia from the 1870s. But she's right. The Galicianas, although it's hard to envision the Satmar Ruv, I don't think you'd ever call him a Galiciana. He was already real Hungarian. And you see Rav Menashe Klein, his Derech Eretz for the Chatam Sofer, indicates he was more Hungarian than influence of Poland. Now, at the end, we mentioned about the machine matzahs. It was a sideshow, and I mentioned that you all know of Rav Chaim Sansava, the Sansa Rav, the Shinova Rav, his son, the most famous, that they asked machine matzahs. And she tells me, one of the reasons that the Divrei Chaim asked machine matzahs, which you did not mention, was that it meant taking away panasa for those who worked in the matzah factories. So I have to tell you, I heard two reasons. I'll come back to the main reason, the first reason. I'll give you the source, because once I'm being challenged, I have to defend myself. So I'll give you the source. I looked at the source last in 1952, 1953, but Baruch Hashem, my mind was with me. I heard, number one, the harabanya, the sweat the work that went in. And this is true. You appreciate something that you really sweated for. It's the old story, if you're wealthy. I've always had a debate with your wealthy friends. They look at me, you know, I'm a butler. My tape circulated. I didn't even know that someone was copying them and selling them. Baruch Hashem, I said, I don't mind anything, but let me know in advance, because I never knew people are going to listen outside of the classroom. You have to watch what you say. I don't want to maledict anyone. In the classroom, you can do whatever you want, but if it's going all over the world, you have to be a little careful. Okay, not too much careful, because you have to be you. But, all right, so you know, and people ask me, what are your fees? I say, fees, whatever. I said, the truth is, I would lecture anywhere for nothing, but I can't do it because I have to cover my cost in getting to the States. I want to, but whatever you pay any second-rate scholar in residence, that's fine. Whatever you pay is wonderful. So I have, you know, I don't have a business manager. My books, all of you know, I can say it publicly because it's a disgrace. Kol Zman Ketav existed, I got royalties twice a year. Then Urim took over. From the day that the Israeli Urim took over Ketav, I have not gotten royalties. And I try, and I know the book, I know my two volumes on the Rav are being sold. If anything, they're the only ones available that describe the Rav's life. No one has come near what I did in those two volumes. There will be another 100 years till anyone can approach the Rav's life properly. I did the Rav's, it's not me, the Rav's speaking. It's invaluable in that sense that you don't find Rakefet pulling the Rav right or pulling him left. It's Mori Urebi. In modern Hebrew, netto, that's the word, net. So, haven't gotten royalties. I called them, and it's not, it's hundreds of, it's not big money, but it's not right. Someone publishes a book and has a contract. Finally, someone called me to tell me they lost the records. All right, go and sue them. And in America, Rabbanim pleaded with me to sue them. That they said they did this to me, that to me, but who has the time? And I have three lawyers, my daughter, my two granddaughters-in-law, have all the lawyers in the world, crackerjack lawyers, but that's not the point, a disgrace. Aaron Rakefet is going to sue someone. It's a disgrace. So this is the old question. My friends smack me around, you don't care about your grandchildren. So I want to ask you, is it good to give a grandson in Israel? You give him an apartment, you give him a car, he never has to struggle. Or is it better to say to the grandson, I struggled, you have to struggle, what do you appreciate more? Okay, you understand? I don't want to elaborate, but the lefum tsara igra, you can't say it better than Chazal. So when you come in to Rami Levi and buy a kilo, 5 kilo, 100 shekel, shmur matzah, you're not even your mark, you're not yotze with the shmur. You know why you're not yotze? It tastes like cake. Shmur matzah, when I grew up in Philadelphia, when I came to, you know what the challah tasted like? Shabbos, a guy baked in his house, there was no kosher bakery, it tasted like wallpaper. Shmur matzah, what it used to taste like? Hashem Yirachem, but that was like Mara. Your father was a double mitzvah of Mara. Today in Israel, you have shmur matzah, it tastes like cake. No, you taste dove, you taste cake, you yotze, it's matzah shira, what can I tell you with all the hashgachas in the world? But when you sweat, oh, then you feel it. So that's the one reason. The real reason, and here's the source, and here too I found something very interesting. There's a wonderful sefer that revolutionized my life as a young kid. We were kids, we were able to read Hebrew thoroughly, we grew up in A.T., but it was a different world. There were no, the only English translation we had of the Gemara was Sansino. And if you know Sansino, it's very hard to learn from Sansino. You can pick up a word, the Akadar, it's good. On a difficult word, Sansino will help you. But today, what you fellas have, it's not even learning. I showed my wife Steinzel, she was crying. She went to Ramaz, she's crying. I was born before my time. Steinzel, it spoon feeds you, it's fabulous, all right? If you don't read Hebrew, you have Schottenstein. Schottenstein is too much, you get lost in it. I get lost in it. But now you have Steinzel's in English? Wow, with colored pictures? Rebbeinu Shelolem, the Gemara, it pats you on the face. Come, how can you not know all of Shas? What's your first name?
Yosef.
Do you know all of Shas or not yet?
Not yet.
Where do we stand? Yeah, 1,000 daf under the skin? 1,000 daf, yes or no? How old are you?
26.
Oh my gosh, at that age I had 1,500 Daffan Bereshit. All right, you'll get there, you'll get there. You live longer, but take my word for it. I'm a kid yet, but you'll live longer. Ah, I love Yosef, fabulous. So the reason the Sefer that came out in the early 50s, Sharim Mitzvim B'Halacha, and here too, I don't want to waste time telling you all the stories, but very interesting individual. Harab, I know his family, Shlomo Zalman Braun. He was a survivor. He was a Rav in Williamsburg. What was different about him, he was individualistic. Remember, I spoke about this, I don't know, in this class, the Sunday class, the Monday class. I believe I spoke about it here. Maybe it's in America, maybe in Russia. But you see, today you're living in a world, everyone is the same. The thrust is on, we all have to look the same, act the same, talk the same, think the same. This is what we call the swing to the right. You look today in Lakewood, for instance, everyone is dressed the same way. When I went to Lakewood, no two students looked alike. I'm now reading a biography of Shmuel Rezepsky, the Panovich Rosh Yeshiva. Look at the pictures of what Chevron, what Reb Shimon Shkop, what Grodno was like, what Mir was like, what Brisk was like. No two students looked the same, didn't dress the same. He was individualistic, and he wasn't afraid to paskin, he wasn't afraid to go against the trend. He put out a four-volume Kitzur Shulchan Aruch with a kuntres Sharim B'Tzinim B'Halacha, where he summarized the Halacha. Now, these volumes, tremendous impact on me. It opened up my eyes to response to literature. In the first edition, and this is very fascinating, downstairs we have the second edition in the library. This is not in the second edition. I could not find it. It's in the first edition, volume 3, page Samach Bet 62, subdivision 18. And he deals with the machine matzahs. And there it's what I mentioned last week, which I told you I'm ashamed to mention in public. It's near, but what can I do? It's here. B'shem HaRizal. Sheyatriach adam bi'atzmo b'matzah shom mitzvah ad ki yitchamein v'yazia v'zeh tikun l'hotza'at. And he has zal l'hotza'at zichrona levracha. It means zera levatala. So that, and he goes on and on, and he says this is the tradition that Reb Chaim Sanza said I'm opposed to machine matzahs. Vahatam kamus imadi. I don't want to reveal it, obviously. To talk about this in public is not sanua. So this is the reason that I really believe is the basis. But I'm very happy to accept what my Talmida Miriam Kupski says to me. She's from the family. And you said it, you heard it as well. Yosef, remember you told me after class? So I'm very happy to accept the emendation, and they don't contradict, they supplement each other. You follow? Okay.
Now, was Rabbi Braun from New Jersey?
No, he was from Williamsburg. He was Ungarische. He has family today living in Israel and living in Brooklyn.
Did Feldheim publish this?
Yes, Feldheim published it, absolutely. Feldheim has the copyright on it, and they republished it, and it's still very valuable with all that's been published. His work is very valuable, very fascinating and very valuable. Now, also with last week I mentioned, and take a look what comes out of Gedolei Yisrael, and this is part of the modern world where we're influenced. They will talk about this at the press conference in 2 weeks' time, Be'ezrat Hashem. There's so much outside influence upon us. Upon Gedolei Yisrael there's outside influence. And the children not always turn out the way we want them. We have to be very thankful if we're successful with our children. It's you got to. So take a look. David Halberstam is a descendant, I said, of the Sansa. So Miriam says the family is not certain. He may be of the Sansa or maybe of the Sansa's brother. Now I tried to check it out. I want you to know. And I went to Wikipedia, I went to the New York Times, Not one word about his forebears. It's all about David Hammerstein, the important sociologist, political scientist, the sports fan, a man who worked day and night, always writing, always innovative, genius ability. And another fact which is not known is when you mentioned the Pulitzer Prize journalist David Halberstam, we were in contact with his brother Michael, a physician in Washington who is interested in the family and contacted us. He believed that he did not come from the Divrei Chaim directly, but from a brother who wanted to escape to America and wasn't exactly a model religious Jew, so he told us. Now, this Michael Halberstam died young. The New York Times article talks about David's older brother became a well-known cardiologist in Washington. Listen to this. In 1980, Michael Halberstam was shot in his home and killed by an intruder. So I imagine this question hangs fire, whether he was a direct descendant of the Divrei Chaim or whether he was a direct descendant of the Divrei Chaim's father. That question has to hang fire. Okay. Now I'm ready to move on, and today's shiur you'll see is quite fascinating. Okay, this is what we did last week, and that's the Halberstam. All right. Excuse me. My dear students, first of all, one other thing. I want to learn the names of the members of the Kollel brave enough to become my students. I welcome you with open arms. And also, I forgot to say hello to the thousands listening across the world. The Rebbe says good morning to you, and he wants to remind David Goldis that the shiur's been changed Sunday morning to 9:05. That's a comment coming in. He was all excited. He's going to be in the afternoon. It's a miracle. 9:05. Please, everyone in the room, very clearly write your name. If you're in Smicha, add college, yeshiva college, Penn, where you went to college, and then add what your Smicha. If you're not in Smicha, please give us an email and a phone number. In case of an emergency, we should be able to contact you. Remember, I'm not getting younger, and last year was the first time ever I had to call off a class in the Kollel due to ill health. And to reach the outsiders, it's a new challenge. So email very clearly, and we'll appoint someone in charge that if anything happens, with one call, everyone can be informed. So you fellas are good Jews. Can I ask you a simple question? What makes a Jew happier? Just think. Have you ever davened in Hendon, in the big shul there? Rabbi who? Kimchi's shul, exactly. The big shul. What's the name? You know the name?
That's
it. Whatever its name is, Rabbi Kimchi's shul. If you have davened in that shul during the week in the Beis Medrash, you will notice there are lights on the side. Different colored lights. Can anyone tell me what those colors mean? When they don't say Tachnun, the lights light up to tell you one color means there's a Brit Milah in the shul that day. One color means there's a chatan at the minyan. It's unbelievable. Did you ever see how happy Jews get?
Ner Yisrael, Ner Yisrael.
They have the same thing?
No, it's called.
Oh, Ner Yisrael. Thank you. You're right, it's called Ner Yisrael. But when we think of Ner Yisrael, it's Baltimore. The Jews get happy. When I got the call last night that my granddaughter-in-law gave birth Friday night, I was a little disappointed. I figured, wow, I'll have a Brit. Won't have to say Tachlin one day next week. All things being equal, the Brit is on Shabbos. Maybe they won't say Avarachamim, I don't know. That's Taluyin in Minhag. Nothing makes Jews happier than saying Tach, than missing Tachlin. What are we talking about? Tuesday, Wednesday, Tachlin, a minute and a half. Okay, Monday, Thursday. For 4 minutes, 4 minutes, all right. And the Hasidim absolutely have animosity to saying Tachlin. They publish calendars. I mean, I saw this and lived it with my own eyes in Borough Park. With the Yotzeit every day, and they give a clap, they go, Yotzeit from the Chelech and Kutzitzvah Rebbe, no Tachman. Wow. What's going on here? Worse than that. As a kid, I never said Tachman at Mincha. Why you? You finished learning, Shir ended quarter to three, 10 to 3. Davin Mincha, Ashrei, Heche Kedusha, no Tachnun, Oleinu. The only Rebbe in the yeshiva that wouldn't make a Heche Kedusha was Rabbi Macy Gordon, who just died, Zichrono Livracha. He said, Macy, sheet the word, if you don't teach the kids to say Chazaret Zashatz, they will not know Ivra. You follow? That was Macy Shita. All right, could be there's something to it. Never said Tachman.
What about the
Rav? We never daven mincha in the shiur with the Rav. But if we did daven mincha, it was in the Beis Medrash after the shiur much later in the day. Of course, he came in the morning on Tuesday, and we did say Tachman. Now, and then suddenly I see people say Tachman. I don't know, mincha, why? You mentioned the Rav. Then I learned from the Rala. Oh, look up. Hilchat Tefila. Perek Hamishi. Halacha Aleph. The Rambam says, Paskins la Halacha. Shmona Devarim, Saricha Hitmalel, Lihizacheb Hem la Sultan. 8 different aspects go into Shmona Esrei. And the Rambam describes them. You have to stand, you have to face the Beis HaMikdash, you have to have your body clean before, you have to be dressed properly, the place you're davening has to be clean, you have to whisper, you can't daven aloud. You know, we learn out davening in the Sofer Na'ot from Chana, we learn out davening for HaKriya, you have to do 5 Kriyot during Shmon Esrei, 1, 2 at the start, 3, 4 towards the end, and at the end, when you come back, also shalom. Vahahishtachavaya. And you have to bow down. Go, Hilchat Philip, Perikhei, Halachatet Vav. And the Rambam describes what Hishtachavaya means. And this is part of Shmona Esrei. Without the Hishtachavaya, there is not a full kiyum of Shmon Esrei. And Mori Urebi Kedako Bekodesh, again, you young fellows being raised in a world where the Rebbe is viewed as the great philosopher. Rabbi Rubin and I both knew the Rebbe in his prime. That he was a philosopher, we can't deny, but that was not the essence of the Rav. What are you saying?
He was a halachist.
The essence of the Rav was brisk, was litter. The philosophy was icing on the cake. It's like my debate with the book that came out, Dolphin. I wrote the preface. He does a beautiful job. I love his footnotes. I love the research. I can tell you stories about the research, how he asked. I told him that Tova told me 50 years ago that her grandmother, Mitzad, her mother, lived with the family in Boston till the day she died. But I told Rabbi Dolphin, you can't publish that based on my memory, check it out. Do you know that he found an old lady in Boston who gave him the whole story and confirmed every word I said? But I, you know, the Rav loved Chabad, but I can't say he was a Chabadnik. He said, if you read Rabbi Dolphin's book, he has the Rav becoming a Litvak Chabad synthesis. I say, no, the cake was chocolate, brisk, and the icing was whipped cream on top of the cake was Chabad. So the Rav was kulo Torah, kulo bris, Oh, but then he went into the philosophy. What does this tachavaya mean? And here, this is the Rav. This is literally the heart of the Rav. Take a look. You daven, Sam. You stand before God. You talk to God. Atachonen liadam dat. Give me dat. Right? Shlach lanu avinu. Oh my gosh, the request that you're making, Rafana, Shema Kolenu. Who are you? What are you? So you see, after Shmoneh Esrei, when you think you've climbed the mountain and you're such a big, important individual, then Hishtachvaya, you fall Korim in the morning, you're like, on this hand, and this hand, unless you're a lefty. And you have to admit to God, with all that I got and with all that I said, I'm still a little puny human being. You see, the duality of the human being, big enough to face God and make so many requests, but on the other hand, don't forget who you are. And the Hishtachavaya, I would call it the Hachna'ah, is a kiyum in the Shmoneh Esrei. Well, after I heard that from the Rav, from that point on, I never resented saying Tachnun again at Mincha. Even though all the years in the yeshiva, Mandecha Shemei, who ever mentioned Tachnun, who heard of Tachnun? Not for us. All right. But when I heard the Rav, the Rambam, part of the Shmoneh Esrei, all right, I have to say Tachnun. But nevertheless, if I daven Mincha, you know, I live in Yerushalayim, I guess some of you come from communities too, I imagine in Teaneck, maybe in West Hempstead as well, certainly in Borough Park, you have endless minyanim. So although I have a home minyan in the morning, where I've been for 49 years, or Rivka, Mincha depends if my grandchildren are here and one day we're not married. I certainly daven Mincha in the Shtublach to daven with them. But if they're not here, I walk up the hill one block, I go to Yatama to daven. Yatama, there is never Tachnun at Mincha. Can anyone tell me how Yatama began? Gentlemen, do you know where Yatama, Yosef, do you know where Yatama is? Yatama, ah, Yatama. Do you know where the Prime Minister lives? Balfour, Aza. Roll down Aza. The first light you come to, turn left. Like you walk into the Prime Minister, you walk 1 minute and there's Yatama. Okay?
Rechov Ha'ari.
Rechov Ha'ari, corner of Aza, facing Matudela. How did Yatama begin? And here's the story. When I came in Aliyah, it was a living story. A gentleman survived the Holocaust, his name was Teitelbaum. He made a little money in New York, he lived in Forest Hills. He and his wife had no children, survivors. They came in Aliyah, late 50s. Came in Aliyah, the only shul in the neighborhood was Ohel Rivka. Ohel Rivka was established 1932, Rav Kook laid the cornerstone. There's a famous picture where Rav Kook is putting the cornerstone down in the ground. Fine. A lady named Rivka gave them 50 sterling, which covered the cost of the building, whatever it would be worth today, I have no idea, but 50 sterling, there's a whole plaque in the shul that describes it. And that's why it's called Ohel Rivka, named after this lady. Fine. This man goes to daven and Ohel Rivka, survivor, Chassidish Yid, Avadim Yid, Kenzayim Bungarish Yid, a Galiziana Yid, and he davens there, he's davening there 2 years. He's now walking in the center of town, Rehov Yafo. And he meets a Jew and he says to the Jew, Shalom Aleichem. And the Jew looks at him, from Avu Kenechach, where do I know you from? And he says to this Jew, you idiot, we've been davening together 2 years and old Rivka. Old Rivka was a cold, litvish shul. No one looked at anyone. All they did is they walked in, they davened, they walked out. They never said hello. They never allowed food into the shul. These are facts. No kiddushim, nothing. This is a shul net davening, netto, rak tvila. This Jew, Teitelbaum, got so angry. There was a Rav where by wartime looking to build a new building to establish a shul in the area. They hooked up. He gave him $50,000 on condition. The Nusach and the Shul would be Sfad. Doesn't matter who the people are, but it has to be Sfad. Why? It'll attract Hasidic Yidden, and they'll be warm Yidden. They will talk one with the other. That's exactly what happened. The Cherem, it used to be on the wall. They remodeled the Shul. I don't see it anymore. You would read on the wall, it is forbidden to daven any other Nusach for the Yomad and the Shul than Nusach Sfad. And in that Shul, they don't say Tachnun. Why? Chassidim, Rambam. Why do they hate Tachnun? Gentlemen, let me explain why. But this doesn't go for nothing. This does not go. Yosef, ask you the Magin Magin Shavya when a doctor, the Gemara. And the Gemara heals, a doctor heals nothing, he's worth nothing. What I'm about to show you goes for 36,000 shekel, $36,000 linked to the shekel, because the shekel's stronger than the dollar today. And if you know what's going on in North Korea, it's going to get a lot stronger very shortly, unfortunately, because I have dollars. I get the Social Security. I worked 40 quarters in America, exactly. The IOU list. You heard about the Rebbe's IOU list? You got to appreciate something. I never collect, but I have to know you're willing to put up the 36 in honor of the source. A deal? Willing, not frightened. Sure. You don't have to ask your wife? Okay.
We'll go into debt, it's fine.
Okay. But, gentlemen, I'm quoting from the Rav, volume 1, page 162. Rebbe gave this talk, it's one of the greatest talks he ever gave. This already was not philosophy, not halacha, this was pure emotion, which is so important in Yiddishkeit. And this was, I heard it many times, the story about the quarter many times, but I'm quoting here, you look it up, it's word by word, taken off a tape, RCA, Midwinter Conference, January 29th, 1973. Okay? And the Rebbe is talking, Mimacharat HaShabbat, and how a Jew doesn't want to leave Shabbat. And you want that holiness to continue. And the Rav tells the story as follows. I'll say it, I'll paraphrase it, but you can read it here. And he told it here, I heard him say it on a Chuvah Rasha. It's one of the stories that had a great influence on his life and thinking. And he describes the family had run away from Khaslovich. Those of you who have read the Rav's sister's memoir, The Soloveitchik Legacy by Shulamit Meiselman, know the story. The communists take over, that hire people to sneak them out, get them to Poland. They were ran away with danger of life if caught. They get to Warsaw, and as the Rub said with his sense of humor, Vastra, what do you think, that we lived in a wealthy neighborhood? We lived in the poorest neighborhood. Who else lived in the poorest neighborhood? The Chassidim. And the Rav describes the Shabbos where he overslept. And he wakes up and he takes a look. It's time to daven Maariv. And he looks around, lights are on, stores are open, Shabbos is ended. Can't go to a Litvish shul. They're finished. But he goes to the Majlis Shtibbel. And he comes into the shtibbel, and he sees they're in the middle of Bnei Haichalan, middle of David, Sudash Lishit. Shabbos ended an hour ago, and there's still Betara, Bekedusha, Bekitlahavut. And he approaches this Jew, Shtraimel, Bekesha, Siddisha Levush. And he says to this Jew, this teenage kid, how old was the Rav? 16, 17. He says to the Jew, Then let them daven in Maariv. When will we daven Maariv? And this Jew looks down at him and says, Vasi Yingel, du bangst noch im Wach? What's with you, young man? You long for the week? And the Rav never forgot that. Think of those words. Think what it conveys. And then Rabbi added, and this will explain to you why Hasidim are not happy about saying Tachlun. Tachlun is Vachadik. How do you say that in English? Weekday, daily, Chulin, Vachadik. A Hasidic Jew wants to be Shabbistic, holy, sanctity, joy, feeling of overwhelming happiness that he's alive, that there's a God, that there's a Torah, that there's a Rebbe, that they're Hasidim. Vasi Yingel, what's with you, youngster? Du bangst noch im Wach? You're anxious to go back to the week? And this already explains a Hasidic state of mind. And this is why when Hasidim come together, they have that concept, Enash, Anshei Shlomeinu. Min dafabrenyin abissal. Can be during the week. Min dafabrenyin. Hard to translate. What does it mean, fabrenyin? Have to spend time, open a bottle of vodka, open some kichlach, kei, mezainis, and stories about the Rebbe. A Hasidic avod. It's like they're transported to a different world. And Tachnun is the worst part. You're nobody. You're a nothing. You're a mortal who will die here today, gone tomorrow. Kohelet. Nah. A Chassid wants Shir Hashirim. And in Shir Hashirim, there's very little Tachnun. Meridik, Meridik. Okay. Explains, take it or leave it. Al pi halacha, halacha remains halacha. The Rambam is what counts. But the feeling of a chassid and tachman, you can start to understand. Herbie, you're wondering, what does this have to do, Rabbi Nasha Klein? Give me a minute and you will understand. And Yitzchak, the sideshow, which we may or may not reach this week, gonna trouble you? Wow, you were a practicing rabbi. You took a salary, right or wrong? Oh my gosh, the Rambam does not find you to be a favorable Jew if that's what you did. See, you can't win it, Rabbi Reuben. Relax. Yosef Krauss. Smicha, year three. I see, all right. Dov Zakheim. What year did you get Smicha? 71?
73.
Wow, so you're not a Beseda. We're almost contemporaries. I was 61. I should have been 62, but I was 7. Because I was with the Rav 4 years. Binyamin Feinmesser. Feinmesser. And where are you from, Binyamin?
London.
And you're London born and raised? Where in London?
Edgemere.
Edgemere? And where did you study? My grandson just started teaching in Shalavim full time today, I believe. Yeah, today. And you went to Shalavim in college?
College
of Machon Lev. All right. Fabulous. Machon Lev began with BMT. It's unbelievable. They had the same dean. The man who gave me my first teaching job in Israel in 69 was the dean of students. It was Reidy Horowitz, Rabbi Horowitz, was both schools. Vic Snow, Zev Goldberg. Zev, will your wife be here tomorrow? I have to ask her a question. Yeah, you'll tomorrow.
Ask me up
the
show, I'll
bring you the answer. No, she's a klutz, right? Maiden name? K-L-O-T-Z?
No. K-A-L-L-U-S.
K-A-L-L-U-S. Kallus.
Kallus.
1 second. So she made, so a different question. Does she know the Daniel family?
Yes.
Borough Park?
Yes, two ways.
Two ways. I remember.
Daniel's daughter married her cousin.
Wow. So we're related.
And she counts.
So we're related. We're related. You got it?
What?
No, no, no. Open up Washington. The first stories about the Daniel family. I begin right after the beginning. I pick up what you say. The first picture. The first picture. Wow. So now I'm related to Vic Snow as well. Oh my gosh, Mark! You see what's happened here? Unbelievable. Yitz Ruben Chaim Morse, Michael Miller. Shea Brick, am I pronouncing it right?
Shua.
Shua, from Yehoshua?
Yes.
Do you relate to the Dykemans, to the Holzes? Brick, I taught a Brick. That Manny Holzes' sister was a Brick, so Zichronim Levracha.
His father was a Shamus of the month. The Chaver of mine was a Shamus
of the month. Chaver of yours in the 80s.
Barry?
What's his first name? Your father's name?
Menachem.
Ask your father if he was, if he didn't study. Did he study in BMT?
He did.
He was my student in BMT. Check with him, okay?
Okay.
If so, second generation. I'm going to give everyone a gift that the that'll put up with the press conference, but the second generation get a second gift too. Eli Kirsch.
Yeah.
Am I pronouncing it right, Eli?
Ellie.
I'm writing E-L-L-Y, so I should pronounce it right, because E-L-I is pronounced Eli.
Right.
Eli Kirsch. Do you relate to Professor Kirsch from Germany who ran away to Yeshiva College late 30s?
No.
All right. Avi Schwartz, we know. Sam Dranch. Aryeh Sklar. Okay, Aryeh, let's roll. Unbelievable question. Reb Menashe Klein, Mishnah Halachat, Chelet Yud Gimel, Siman Chaf. Tshuva was written 1989, and it's written to someone in Bnei Brak. And the question is very simple, that a mohel. You just heard, who mentioned it? Michael Miller, you mentioned it about the mohel, when there's a mohel who does a lot of britot in the Katamon area, whenever he shows up at the Shtiblach, they don't say tachnun at that minute.
He comes a couple times a week.
Because he literally has britot every day. Okay. You don't say tachnun. Wait a minute. What about if he gets paid for Mila?
Which he
absolutely does. No? Do you have the right to call off Tachnun? Shomrim, remember I told you this tshuva was written to Bnei Brak. Shomrim b'shem hagon Reb Yaakov Landau. Going off Beitin to Bnei Brak. Zeich tzadik lebracha. The mohel shelokeach kesef abur malachto pasak shayomru tach. Nun. Wow, I'll give you the source in a minute. First of all,
who was this man?
Who was Reb Yaakov Landau? Who's the Av Beit Din of Bnei Brak today? Mark, the chicken. Do you aware what's going on here? No, who said the chicken? Reb Moshe Steinbuch. Reb Moshe Steinbuch does not have that much influence. He's the Skan Av Beit Din of the Eidah Haredit. He speaks perfect English, by the way. He was Rav in South Africa. People are shocked that someone from the Eidah Haredit has the king's English, the queen's English. But, Reb Moshe Landau of Bnei Brak agreed with him. This is Rav Landau's Hashkacha. It's one of the three big Hashkachas in Israel. The Badats, Rav Landau, or the Rabbanut. They have a 90% monopoly on the market, Hashkacha. Rav Landau, this was his father. No, Lubavitcher's, the Reb Yaakov Landau, the great Reb Yaakov Landau, was a Shamus. You just mentioned the Shamus of the Rav. He was a Shamus of the sixth Rebbe, Reb Yitzchak Yosef. He yet knew the Rashab, he yet grew up in Kamchei Tumim and under Reb Shalom Dov Be'er, the fifth Rebbe. And he asked, what's the source? You have to have a source? Okay. Yoredeya, Hilchat Mila, Siman Reish Samach Aleph. And you're right here in the Ramah, Sif Aleph, Reish Samach Aleph, Sif Aleph, right in the Ramah. Now, who's supposed to do the Brit Mila? The father's supposed to do the Brit Mila, right or wrong? There's stories in the Rav's family that they tell about Rav Chaim, that he once attempted to do a Brit Mila. They plead with him that for again, when he saw blood, he would faint. Father, you all know, those of you, I don't know, I only had daughters, but the Ribbono Shel Olam has a very good sense of humor, because I saw 13 grandsons before I saw a granddaughter, and even with the great children, it's now seven. I don't want to figure out, but overwhelming majority of great grandsons against the great granddaughters. I think I only have. I have 1 second. I got to figure this out. 1 second. Two. One. I think I have 3 great granddaughters. And many, many more great-grandsons. So the Ribbono Shel Olam has a sense of humor, but a father has to do the Brit Milah. So I never had the schut, Baruch Hashem. I've been a tzaddik many times, but I never was the Avi HaBen. Now, how many of you have had sons? You have a Brit. What happens when you have a Brit? You have to be Manana, the Shtit, the Mohel, the Shliach for you, right or wrong? Okay, fine. Ha'av shen yudei olamol, v'yesh kan mohel she'en erotze lamul b'chinam, rak b'ska, yesh lebeitin ligar b'mohel, ki ein zer dakon shel zera Avraham, v'adaraba ha'mohalim mikadrin she'yitnu lechem lamul, v'imamad b'merdo v'ein ta'ish ma'seget la'teit lo scha havei k'mi she'ein lo av she'beitin chayavim lo malo u'lechein beitin kofin oto mi'acha she'ein ache she'yumo. What a halacha! You do a mitzvah? Mila? You're absolutely not allowed to take scha? And look what they're describing here. Here you have a situation where the father doesn't know how to circumcise his son, and he's pleading with the mole, please circumcise my son, and the mole is telling him, like the Chinese used to say when you came to pick up your dry cleaning, no tiki, no washi. Do you know that? All the dry cleaners in New York were Chinese, and the only English they knew was if you didn't have your ticket, you didn't get your wash back. The mother saying, no money, no mila. So look what it says. If the father can't come up with the money, so the Beit Din has to take over, and they beat up the mohel, you gotta give this kid mila. And that is the source. Oh, wow. All right, interesting shaila. What do you do? And here I want to move stories. We'll come back to the Shiloh. But this question of Mila, this is a Gemara Nedarim. It's all of you are familiar with it, I trust. Ma'ani b'chinam, afata b'chinam. That when it comes to mitzvot, you are not allowed. God taught us the Torah. We didn't pay God. We didn't pay him for his work. Torah has to be passed on. Chinam, ein kesef, amal. What about a rebbe? What about a rav? What about koilul yunga light? State of Israel today, you have tens of thousands of people being paid to sit and learn. You all know what's going on with the army. Should they serve? Shouldn't they serve? When do they serve? It's one of the big problems that the Israeli society has to deal with. But whoever heard of being paid to study? When I went to a YU, there was no kollel, no one got paid. Today, you have kollelim on kollelim on kollelim, including a kollel here. People pay to study, people pay to teach. And here you come to the most strident words of Rambam. Hilchatam Torah Perikimel Halacha Yud. Kol ha'meisim alibo she'yasok b'torah v'lo yaseh melacha v'yitpanes min hatzdakah harei zeh chilel et Hashem. Ubizat ha'torah v'kava ma'or hadat v'garam ra li'atzmo v'natal chayev min olam haba lefi she'asur lechenot b'divrei Torah ba'olam hazeh. I mean, these are the most strident words. Look what the Rambam is saying. I'll read more in a second. But Torah, you have to teach chinam, ein kesef. You have to learn chinam. What are you getting paid to sit and learn? And what about all the yeshiva today, the literature world, particularly in the state of Israel, not so much in the United States, but there too you have it. You don't teach children the basics of general study? How are they going to make a living? Can everyone just be a Rav, a Malamed, an Avbeitin, a Dayan, a Sheikhet, a Mohel? And even if you are, you have to be paid. How can you be paid? How can you get money? Wow, the Rambam? No question about it. That the way we live today would not find favor in the Rambam. Amru Chachamim, Kol Enemi Divrei Torah Natan Chayav Min HaOlam. Wow. Committing suicide. Ve'od Sivuvi Amru Lo Taseh Atara Lihit Gadel Ba. You're not allowed to make Torah a crown to be a big shot. Ve'lo Kardom Lach Parbar, not to turn it into a shovel to make a living. Wow. Wow. You want to be rabbis? Close down Gris Kollel. It's a disgrace. What are we turning out? Rabbis, melamdim, become doctors, become dentists, become lawyers, become accountants, become firemen, become policemen. There's so many other professions. For the kol esnat rabbanu, it's pekei avot, right or wrong, you recognize it. For kol torah sheni ma malacha sofa b'teila b'sofa dam she zeh sheyechei melastim et habriyot. And the wind up is, if you don't have a profession, you become a thief, you become a crook. I'll tell you a good story from Sam Dershowitz. I mentioned Sam, Dr. Sam Dershowitz, a PhD, Columbia U, in fabric chemistry. So he's traveled all over the world, advising people, helping people. So one of his travels, he's called into New York, a tremendous Satmar enterprise where they're manufacturing clothing, and they needed his advice with some fabrics and chemistry. And Sam is a native Williamsburg boy to begin with, running away from Hitler, from Czechoslovakia. You may know the family from the land, certainly know him. It's a Williamsburg family. And Sam is in this factory with this Satmar, a multi-millionaire, tremendous factory. And he starts talking with this Satmar. He says, this is years ago. And he says to him, but your children, you had an education, you people went to school, you people know how to run a business, you people know how to manufacture. But the kids today, what are they learning? They don't even get a high school degree. So the guy answers him, yeah, they'll be gangsters. And he quotes the Gemara, and exactly what he said, to a certain degree, you know, we suffer with from the Torah world today, there are many so-called fine, good-looking Jews sitting in state, and not state, in federal penitentiary on all types of financial crimes. And this is what the Rambam says. He's yelling, he's shouting, he's screaming. All right. This is a very interesting Rambam. I need not tell you how much, if you look into the Kesef Mishnah, you'll see already how much comment the Rambam generated. The Tshuvat LaHalacha, the Tashbeis, many others, but it all begins with the Kesef Mishnah. And what, of course, this means, Halacha L'maisa, that in a world where everyone was learned and you didn't need full-time Rabbanim, it was sufficient that someone could paskin very difficult shilas, perhaps give a shir, but you're living in a world where people were on a much higher level of spirituality. In a world like that, a Rav did not take money. Everyone knew how to do a Brit Mila. Many people knew how to do Shkita, particularly Shkita of Dakot. Women even knew. We have Kabbalot that women received in Italy in the 1500s, the 1600s. It was a different world. But in our world today, if we wouldn't have Rabbanim, we would not have any Yiddishkeit. That's what I spoke about last Monday in class, and I brought down Gemaras, and I proved it many times over. And this is the reality. The Rambam is with a world where Baruch Hashem, he could be a medical doctor, work full-time in the Sultan's court, and could yet do the Mishneh Torah. As Reb Yitzchak said, he had a brother who supported him. That's absolutely true. Then the brother, there's a shipwreck, and the brother loses everything.
The brother dies
and loses, and there's no longer support. But the world in which we live today, it's a different reality. Now, if you want to justify it within the letter of the law, then I'll ask you a simple question. For the sake of argument, Chris is paying me a salary for teaching. Tell me, am I being paid for the 4 hours a week I spend in the classroom teaching, or for the hundreds of hours that go into preparation of every shir? You with me? Okay? This is the same thing with Shabbat. A rabbi speaks on Shabbat, a scholar in residence speaks on Shabbat. For the sake of argument, I just was in Lawrence. So I spoke 3 times. Let's put together, I spoke on Sunday, leave Sunday out. Shabbos, maybe I spoke with a total of an hour and 20 minutes between both talks. The one after after Musaf, and the one at Sudah Shlishit. Okay? What am I being paid for? The talks, the preparation. And when you talk about preparation, remember what I told the audience? A year ago, they asked me to talk about Rabbi Yitzchak Kotner. So I prepared on Rabbi Yitzchak Kotner. From that preparation, I gave a 40-minute talk in Lawrence, and I spent one full year in the Kollel on Rabbi Yitzchak Kotner. Who was he? So, all right, this is what's involved today. If we wouldn't be full, people need full-time Rabbanim. With all the great respect, you take Rabbi Asher Weiss. It's a classic example. Rabbi Asher Weiss's father, do everyone know who Rabbi Asher Weiss is? The American fellas, they're new here. Rabbi Asher Weiss, if he would listen to Aaron Rakefet and Yitzchak Rubin, he would be the chief rabbi of Jerusalem, the chief rabbi of Israel. But our problem is he's too smart, and as he would paraphrase, Evilnish the Kavod and Evilnish the Akmas Nefesh. He doesn't want the Kavod, the honor of being chief rabbi, and he doesn't want the Akmas Nefesh. Rabbi Asher Weiss is a gon. Rabbi Dredge, you have to know him personally. He's a gon. He's been in the building. He's been a sandekeir. There's a picture in my office of myself with Rabbi Asher Weiss. It's a whole story, that picture, but it's not for now. But he's a gon adir. He's a chassid. He's a Kloisenberger. He's a posek. He's the head of his committee that raises funds in America for his kollel and his farim. Is my own Talmud from BMT and Yeshiva College, Henry Olinsky. You have to understand who this man is. His father was a gon, but his father was a businessman. Reb Moshe Feinstein pleaded with his father, be a Rav full time. We need you. No, his father, the Rambam, he wants to make his own panasa. He wants to be independent. His father was a very successful businessman in Brooklyn. But the world The benefit we had from the father is 1/100th of what we have from the son. So you see, this is the way to approach the Rambam. Einach nami, halavai, halavai. I've always told Rabbanim that you should work out a contract with your shul where your salary is decent and all side money you do not accept. You perform weddings, you perform bar mitzvahs, you go to a brit, you go to a pidyon haben, you never take a penny. People offer you money, you have to say, no, I get a salary, dignity, rabbinate, but there's a reality. We have to live. I could have used my head for many different professions, but I would have never been able to give over what I'm able to give over when my whole life, 724, is the Bar Hashem learning, searching, looking, innovating, thinking. Okay. By the way, the Rambam, I'll give you another source, very interesting. You all know the Rambam also wrote a Perush to Mishnayot. That Perush was written in Arabic. So we have a lot of difficulty with the translations. I would imagine the best translation to use is the translation called the Kapach edition, Rav Yosef Kapach. I yet knew Rav Yosef Kapach. I recognized the name. He was a Kaimani. He married. He was at least 16. His wife was 12, 13. She went on to become a tzaddeket here in Yerushalayim. What a family. The man was a gon adir. He knew Arabic perfectly. So his translation is basically the most reliable. So if you go to Pirkei Avot in his, in Perush HaMishnayot, Perek Revi'i, subdivision Zion, Rabbi Tzadok Omer, Lo ta'aseh atara lehitlabel bo, Lo kardom lach paba, Kach hayahilu omer, Udi ishtesh betaga chalaf. Anyone who uses the Torah will be driven out of the world. Kol haneneh, Medivrei Torah notel chayav min ha'olam. And on that page, on that Mishnayot, I should say, look into the Perush HaMishnayot of the Rambam. It is an unbelievable stamp of approval for Yeshiva University. And he writes, among the Chachamim, no one took charity. No one was paid. No one had to knock on doors and collect money. Every last Chacham had a profession. And the Rambam lists out, they were chotev, some of them drew water, some of them were vasatreger, we call it, the Rav would call it in Yiddish. Some of them were blacksmiths, some of them were carpenters. Everyone had a profession. They did not append upon taking money from the public. And the Rambam brings a raya from Hillel HaZaken. Take a look how he didn't have the money to pay to get into the Beit Medrash. And instead of schnurring money, he would go on the roof, the skylight. And you all know the Gemara where they found him in the snow. And this is the Rambam proving we cannot take money for being Rabbanim. All right, it's an interesting sideshow, a question, a mohel, a rav, a malamid, but there's a reality of life. And the mo we're talking about from Katamon, there's no question that without his mila, a lot of britot would be very difficult to get someone to do. And he needs a panasa. So what applies to a rav, what applies to a dayan, applies to a mohel as well. So I know one mohel who taka is wealthy, and he taka takes no money, but people inevitably give him gifts, and I often think the gifts he's gotten over the years are a lot more than the money. I see silver on top of silver on top of silver, and it's all gifts from Mila. But this is the question, can you skip tachlan? And here, I have to tell you, Rav Menashe Klein is caught up with a difficult question. Why? Because he's a chassid. If he wouldn't be a chassid, if he wouldn't come from the chassidish background, if he wouldn't have been opposed to chassidus, Yikov Hadin et Tahar, he could say what he wants and paskin what he wants, and he walk away smiling and happy and confident. But because he has chassidish overtones, Rabbi Yaakov Landau was a shame duffer. This is the Rav of Bnei Brak. This is a Labad, a Chabadnik who yet served the fifth Rebbe, who was an intimate of the sixth Rebbe. And if he gave a psak, if Raha Gonzatzal, the Migdal Milta, and if he gave a psak and he was all upset with these Moalim who took money, and he said, we have to say Tachnun Kedele Bazot HaMochel, to embarrass the Mochel. How dare you take money? Vadai Ka'asheh Pasak Kein Yakum. And he says, then in your community, you have to do what he says. But then he comes down to the halacha that, yes, what can we do? And he tells the story of a kahila in Spain that pops up in the responsa literature. They had no one to blow shofar. They had to go and take someone and pay him to blow shofar. I can add to the stories, Shurigin, they don't have a minion. They hire young men, high school kids, to come, be mashlim the minion, and they give them a few dollars for every minion they come to. So you see, the halacha is the halacha, but there's a reality here. We face a dead end, because if you're going to insist upon it, you're not going to have a Baal Tokeya. Give them a few dollars, let them come. The money is for preparing, for practicing, for learning the dinim, the kiyat ha-shofar, not a simple matter. Kiyat, the shvarim, shvarim, trua, how do you blow? When do you blow? When do you blow 30? When do you blow at the end of davening? 10 plus 10, salin shmon esrei. There's no end involved. All right? When it comes to tachnun and it comes to the ritmila at the end, he says something very, very important. And I believe very correct. Aryeh, when all is said and done, the mohel perhaps is getting paid. We're not happy about that. But tell me, are you participating in a simcha? Do you feel joy? Are you happy? Is it a brit? Don't say tachnun. B'nei Brak, if Rav Landau paskin what he paskin, who am I to come and say something after the king gave his psak? But here, in outside of B'nai Brak, outside of Rav Landau, even if the mohel got paid, please don't say tachman. It's joy, it's happiness. And this comes back to my introductory remarks. Look at the Hasidish lifestyle. Lights on the wall, why there's no tachman, a chatan, a brit milah, a yurtzeit. Look at the shtiblach, look at the calendars, because basically a chassidish yid doesn't want to feel weekdayness, vachadikheit. And any time we are in a mitzvah of joy, we can't bring ourselves to feel how lowly we are. And we can't bring ourselves to be mekayim the hishtach havaya that the Rambam paskins lahalacha is part of Shmoneh Esrei. Okay. Meyinin lanyan boto inyan. Very fascinating question. I continue. Chelik Yud Aleph Siman Kuf. Chelik Yud Aleph Siman Kuf. Tell me, Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Mincha, people who haven't seen the Kotel more than 30 days, Churban, Rip Kriya, Dewey Rip Kriya that I mean. Arei Yerushalayim, Arei Yehuda, etc., etc. Arei Yehuda, I should say. Yerushalayim, Arei Yehuda, Chulbanam. Halacha l'maisa, we only rip Kriya at the Kotel. This is the accepted practice in Israel today. For obvious reasons, Makom HaMikdash, the greatest Chorban of all, the greatest Siluk HaShchina. No, people who travel, all right, was in America, I didn't see the Kotel, I go to the Kotel. What is the mincha? To go Erev Shabbos mincha time. Then you don't rip Kriya. Don't only not rip Kriya, you don't say Tachman. Erev Reish Chodesh, no? Someone gives a bang, Erev Tu Ba'av. All year you have this feeling, Erev, you don't say Tachman. What about Friday morning? And here they turn to Reb Menashe Klein, tshuva from 1973, a Hasidic shul where they never say Tachlim on Friday morning. Interesting question. Friday afternoon, I can understand. Chatzot, after Chatzot, Kedushat HaShabbos. A whole question, can you be Makabel Shabbos early? Very interesting, Rav Asher Weiss deals with this. We paskin lahalacha, the plag hamincha. What about someone who wants to be Makabel Shabbos before the plag hamincha? Rav Asher Weiss gave a whole share in it. He reached the conclusion you could actually be Makabel Shabbos before the plag hamincha. Which leads to a different question, can you be Marech Kedushat HaShabbos indefinitely? And here you come to the Chassidim where the Zeihatan of Shabbos can. But you see, to be Marech Shabbos doesn't mean it has to be Harachab Kedusha. It simply means you're not doing Malacha. But you're not making a Bracha. Havdalah, you can make Havdalah till Tuesday. There's a difference. Whereas to make Kiddush, that's a Bracha. You're making the Baruch Priyagafen, forget about it. You're drinking wine. You can drink wine right now, make a Baruch Priyagafen. But the Birchat Kedusha Tayom, Joseph, you with me? The Birchat Kedusha Tayom is a serious question, Aryeh, of a bracha levatala. So Rav Asher Weiss, very interesting. But even Rav Asher Weiss, it's till before Chatzot, there's no concept of Kedusha Shabbos. But all right, Arab, we understand the Karban Pesach. I mean, there's already a, you know, all know, you Dalit Nisan. The day has Kedusha. Al pi halacha, we're not allowed to do malacha after Chatzos, only what you can do on Chol HaMoed, because there's a certain Kedusha, because you're bringing the Korban Pesach then. So, Friday morning, how does it happen that you should not say Tachnun? So I'll show you one final source today. Very fascinating. Look in Torah Chaim, Hilchot Shabbos, Resh Nun, Sif Aleph. Yashkim baboker b'yom shishi lahachim tzachei Shabbat. All right. One has to work early Friday to prepare tzachei Shabbat. Life has taught me this is a very bad halacha for one simple reason. Murphy's rule. Whatever will go wrong Erev Shabbos. So my wife and I have a principle. You have to prepare Shabbat Thursday, never Friday. And I can tell you over the years, lo aleinu, death, Friday's the worst day. Rabbis in America will tell you the busiest day of the week is Sunday for them. Why? Because backs up from Friday, Shabbos, Sunday, all right? It's inevitable that you're going to have to be at the Beit Olam on Sunday. Add that with the Haskarat Neshamat and the Hakamat Matseva, which is always on Sunday, etc., etc. But don't leave it. Don't follow this halacha. But a very interesting halacha. Yashkim Baboka. look into the Magen Avraham, Shenema Vahaya Bayom Hashishi. It's what it talks about the man. Vahaya Bayom Hashishi, you have to prepare what you gathered. Vahaya Ela Miyad. That Vahaya is always early, immediately, quickly. Shenema Vahaya Kikam Haplishti. Doesn't give you the source. We need an edited edition of the Shulchan Aruch. Here's the source. Shmuel Aleph, Perik Yud Zayin, Pasuk Memchet, Vahaya Kikam Haplishti. Vayelech Vayekrav Likrat David. It's talking about Goliath. And Goliath, quickly, he got up. He's running to David. Vahaya Vahechinu. Vahaya, Friday morning, you get up quickly. You have to get to work. You have to start. Shabbat is coming. That is the source. That Hashkama, Friday is different. You don't sleep late. Finally, look into the Prima Gadim. Bottom of the page, Prima Gadim, Mishpatzot Zahav. Look into Reish Nun Aleph, and he continues to comment that you're even allowed to go to work for Shabbat before you daven. And he warns you, don't push off Kriyat Shema. See that you say it bisman. See that you daven bisman. But you're allowed to go to work before you daven, to get ready for Shabbat. And not only that, listen to these words, v'ein l'chasid l'tchasid l'harich b'tfilah b'yerev Shabbat. Yotemidai. You ever see a guy davening for the Yomid Ticha de Tzibura, Edmund State, Alayishmon Esrei? That's not someone who can daven for the Yomid. When I was in the rabbinate, I used to plead with them, don't wait for me. It disturbs my kavanah. I daven the way I daven. But you daven at a normal pace. But look, Asala Chassid Lechit Chassid. Now it's not talking about a Chassid as we know, a Chassid meaning a Lubavitcher, a Breslover, a Gera, a Munkacher, a Belzer. It means a Chassid. This is long before Chassidus came to the world. But it means a Chassid. Wildstein, a Langishmon Esrei. There's a guy, Matzoi Shabbos, when he davens to the Yomid, it's bad news for us. Oh my God, I kvetch dois hashmon esrei, Rebbeinu Shel Olam, here in Israel. You finish Shabbos, you gotta get home, you gotta make Havdalah, you have to hear the news, you gotta know whether you're alive or not. Today you don't have to hear the news, you gotta turn your computer on, iPad, whatever it is, my grandson. Baruch Hashem, everyone comes to shul, they daven, they're moving during davening, they're flipping it up, oh wow, different world. But you got to know whether we're alive. Oh man, there was a helicopter yesterday in Yerushalayim. You have to know, was it a serious helicopter or just someone enjoying himself at the expense of good souls? But what words? So what do you see from here? Rabbi Menashe Klein quotes this Prima Gadim, quotes this, this is the Taz. Did I say Magen Avraham? One second. Is this the Taz or the Magen Avraham? This is the Taz. Quotes this Taz and quotes the Ramah that Shabbos, Erev Shabbos begins already Friday morning. If this is the case that it begins Friday morning, then it's ample reason not to say Tachman. The Kedusha of Shabbos is already felt. Again, the Chassid has a way out, even on Friday morning, and what they're doing in this shul is not to be criticized, that they have a right to abolish, negate, abrogate, skip, call it what you wish, the Tachnun on Friday morning. So, Shua, to reiterate, one second, let me see that I have a, that Shua there, right? The, next to you. Brick.
Yes.
Brick. Wow. Check with your father if he's not related to it, because I seem to recall the brick I taught was your grandmother. Is she alive?
No.
How long ago did she die?
3-4 years.
Mm-hmm. And the brick I knew, I think, died more, so maybe, check, maybe I'm skipping a generation, because years have gone by. But the holes of family, it might be a great uncle. Is that possible? Check it out. Let me know. I'm curious. Brick. Where is your grandmother buried?
My grandmother is buried in New Jersey. She's over Rokeah.
So it's not the same family, because the brick, I think, is buried here in Beit Shemesh, in Helkat, the RCA, in the RCA plots. Holes.
Is Rokeh in Belgium?
Yes.
Okay, so the name in Israel is pronounced Rokach. And how do you say the Belzer Rebbe?
She's a great-great-grandkid of the Maaseh Rokeach.
She's a great-grandchild of?
The Maaseh Rokeach.
One second, who's the Maaseh Rokeach?
None of the Belzer Rebbe.
There are not that many Belzer Rebbe. Reb Shalom? Rabbi Yoshua Dov, I believe.
That's about all I know.
Of course, my wife is Anur Einikel of the Sashalom's. My wife's great-great-grandfather was the Shliach Tzibur for the Sashalom. That was the first Belzer Rebbe. And my wife is probably named for the first Belzer Rebbe in Malka. That's the name that comes down in the family. And Malka was the wife of the Sar Shalom, who was the first Belzer Rebbe. And here in Israel, it's pronounced Rokach. And you'll see in Tel Aviv, there's a street. One of the mayors, one of the big politicians in Mapainik, was a Rokach. It's part of the Belzer family. Gentlemen, to reiterate, very fascinating what Reb Menashe Klein gets us involved with. Sheilat that seemed so simple, and yet it brings a whole world to life. So today we spent the entire day dealing with Tachnun. We'll finish up the last Shavuot. I'll show you the final end of it next Bezrat Hashem. But Tachnun is not for Chassidim. Jews who enjoy life and have that joyful feeling, Shua, they don't want to say Tachnun, don't want to be reminded. We Briskers, we Litvakin, we have no choice. The Rambam Paskin what he Paskin, but nevertheless, when I daven with a Hasidic minion or I daven in Yad Tamawa, they're not saying Tachnun, I do not fall Tachnun on my own. That's a different halacha, that if you want to say Tachnun, go out of the shul. Don't say it. Don't show you're different than the minion. It's a ke'ein lo titgo to do, I'll put it that way. The Erev Shabbos Shuvah is very, very fascinating, because it shows that the concept of Shabbos, Vayash came Avraham, like a Brit Milah, early in the morning. But fine. What we're going to get involved with next week has never, ever been discussed before, and I hope it will never be discussed again. It's a reflection of life in the greater New York area. When a hold-up man pulls a gun on you, what does that mean? Is it life-threatening or only taking your money? And what's the nafgamina lahalacha? And this is what I said last week about Menashe Klein. He would deal with questions and halacha, see three dimensions that no one else could touch, no one else could understand. This was a man, you'll see next week, caught up with life. My dear students, I wouldn't miss tomorrow's class for all the atom bombs that are now being prepared around the world. North Korea, if you heard the news this morning. Because we're about the safest country. If you live on the West Coast, I wouldn't sell you life insurance right now. On the East Coast, I charge you a little more. You don't understand what I'm saying, because my brother lives on the West Coast. And he's a nervous wreck, because everyone on the West Coast knows it's easier for North Korea to reach there than to reach the East Coast. So I wouldn't miss tomorrow's class. Tomorrow's class, we're continuing with describing what Anglo-Jewry in America and Canada looked like around the turn of the 19th to the 20th century. And tomorrow, the heart of the shiur will be devoted to the OU, how it was established, why, who the leaders were, how this affected the East Europeans, and then Be'ezrat Hashem will come in to the rabbinate as we know it, beginning with 1902, the precursor to the RCA, the Union of Orthodox Rabbis of the United States and Canada. You remember Rav Lazer Silver? Okay, and Canada. You know the story, you know what I'm talking about, Joseph? No, you don't know. It's not a toll booth, it's Rav Lazer Silver was always flying everywhere. He was head of the Agudat Rabbanim, head of Agudat Yisrael. He was the Rav's role model. The Rav worshipped the ground he walked on. The Rav wanted to be like Rav Lazer Silver till the reality of the American rabbin had put a knife in his back, and then he was happy to be a Rebbe in a little room in Yeshiva University with about 15 students, and out of that little room came an entirely new world of Torah, the Yirat Shemayim, and I let off a little steam at the press conference on that. You with me so far? So Rav Lazer gets into a cab, he's heading for the airport, and he tells the cab driver to rush, he's late, and the police stop the cab, the guy's rushing. So the driver tells the policeman, "Officer, I have the chief rabbi of the United States, I have to get him to the airport." And Rav Lazer Silver pops up, United States and Canada. And that happens to be a true story, certified by the family. And if you don't believe it, you can read it in a volume called The Silver Era. Anyone publish something that's not true? I ask you. Gentlemen, the freebies. First of all, a beautiful story. I made copies of it if anyone wants and to pass it on. There's a great Gaon in B'nai Brak, Reb Yitzchak Zilberstein. You probably know him too. He's the big postdoc in medicine. My brother used to go to his shiurim regularly. The brother, so where Reb Zilberstein davens, he instructed the Gabbai, given aliyah to the soldier who arrived in the rabbi's Beit Medrash on Shabbat dressed in his army uniform. So Reb Zilberstein said, give him an aliyah. They gave him an aliyah, no soldier. But very strange, he comes in army uniform on Shabbat. I mean, when I came home from the army, Shabbat, I put on regular clothes, not the army uniform. And then the Reb Zilberstein explained, this soldier, he knew the soldier, he knew his story. He was a Baal Tshuva. And when he got home from the army, he was worried that his mother would wash his uniform on Shabbat. She was still not religious. And because of his mother's great love for the Israeli army, she looked forward to the opportunity to launder her son's uniform whenever he came home, in order to make certain that his mother didn't violate Shabbos by washing his uniform. He purposely wears his army uniform on Shabbat to avoid any such possibility. He insisted that the young man give him an aliyah. There was a terrible tragedy in Brooklyn. A house burned down in Borough Park. A couple were killed, very moving. You must have a fire alarm. I know in my house I have, it shuts off automatically the electricity if there's any problem. This is the New York Times article. This is a very fascinating on what we just spoke about, the Israeli army, how the army is cracking down on people who get a deferral at their learning Torah full time when they're not. And here's one story of how they cracked down on some yeshiva boy who claimed he's learning full time. It turns out that he was learning 2 hours a day at most, and even then, he had sich gewaldet, and the rest of the day he was working illegally and not declaring it. This is with DNA, how you can rewrite the history of your family. And it's a New York Times article, particularly the Jews, our DNA is the easiest to trace because over the centuries we constantly intermarried with them. And the DNA is easily traceable and you can figure out who you are and where you come from. This is an article on Yeshiva University with the dreams when they were building the building. A little bit of this I write about in Revel, but this is by my Talmidah Shulamit Berger, the librarian. Very fascinating of the original plan, what the yeshiva was to look like and who they finally turned to be the architectures, and the tradition of the Hanukkah dinner as a fundraiser for yeshiva. This is about Munich, New York Times article, something we lived here in Israel. It goes back to 72, the Munich massacre. And they finally got them to put up a monument at the Olympic Village in Munich in memory of the Jews never who were killed. And it's a very sad story because some of the people killed were the sole they were children of survivors of Hitler. And they were not yet married, it was 72, so that when they were killed, it wiped out these families entirely. So, right, we shouldn't have any more tragedy. The Reb David Applebaum and Nava, they should have a lichtige Gan Eden, go malala, the neshamas al Hablan Aliyah should rise on the yard site, and we should be zeicha to hear only good news and to say mazel tov and nothing else for years and years to come. Until we meet again in health and happiness tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, Das V'danya. 2 weeks time, Sunday, press conference, Rakefet lets off steam. In Yana Diyoma, I'm touching upon every problem that's come my way in these last 6 months. No holds barred, free, I have to say. Monday, it is a picture show, Moscow Revisited. You will not be bored, guaranteed.